Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside my co-host, World B, Michael Freer. And this is episode number 46, the Aaron Baines episode, as Baines pretty much gets the honorary nod by default here. Slim pickings tonight, World B, but hey, Baines had some solid NBA seasons, and I'll certainly always remember when he began expanding his range out to the three-point line and became a respectable three-point shooter when given space. So I'm sure if he was around these days, I'd throw him in for a three-pointer here and there on a parlay. And speaking of those bets, Bet Online is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines and the latest matchup reports for this year's NBA playoffs. Bet Online is your sports intel headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your insider sports wagering needs, from basketball, MLB, NHL hockey, golf, to UFC and boxing. The fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games, available to play right from your home. Get in on the action today. So head to the website or use your mobile device to join, and be sure to use our promo code BLEAV, that is BLEAV, to receive your 50% bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. And we'll be, before we do get started tonight, you know, our partner and co-host Bruce Bernstein won't be with us this week on our shows. This Monday morning, Bruce's mom, Teddy, passed away at the age of 96. Bruce's mom was a huge fan of the Celtics, Patriots, and Red Sox. And like many Celtics fans, Teddy never thought the refs gave the Celtics a break. So at least we know the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree there. She went peacefully on Monday, and Bruce and his family are doing all right. And Bruce will be back a week from today. So we certainly thank everyone for their kind thoughts. And I know on behalf of you and I, we wish the Bernstein family well during this difficult time. And with that, we'll go ahead and get started with you with our opening tip.
Well, thank you, Ross. Carmelo Anthony officially announced his retirement Monday after 19 seasons in the NBA. Regardless of your thoughts on his career, no NBA championship, no MVP, the numbers are obviously Hall of Fame worthy. Over 28,000 career points in his career. This is the list of players who have scored more points than Melo: LeBron, Kareem, the Mailman, Kobe, MJ, Dirk, the Dipper, and Shaq. When you reach this level, using your full name isn't necessary, and that was the case with Melo. People will point to the fact that he's never won an NBA championship or even reached the NBA Finals and use that as a blemish on his career, and that's not entirely unfair. However, anyone who wants to be on, you know, wants that to be on his career resume should also acknowledge that Melo led Syracuse to the 2003 NCAA championship as a freshman, and he won a gold medal at the Olympics in 2008, 2012, and 2016. He was arguably the greatest Olympic player ever. In the eyes of many, Melo's career will be defined by what he didn't accomplish. And count me among the people that was not exactly thrilled to see him become a Knick back in 2011. But when you take his career from college to the NBA to the Olympics, there are very few that can match what Melo did over 20 years.
Absolutely. Well said there, World B, and congrats on to Melo and for his tremendous career in the NBA. I certainly grew up a fan of his game, especially being a master of the mid-range with the footwork, and then, of course, those dagger threes that he hit throughout his career with both the Nuggets and the Knicks, more specifically there. As for my opening tip, after an embarrassing loss in Game 3, Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla was asked if he has lost the locker room. He responded, quote, "Yeah, it's why I need to be better, to figure out what this team needs." Well, I think I know what this team needs, and that's a new coach. There's absolutely no way he can recover from this. Admitting that he's lost the locker room at the most important time and biggest stage of the season is a death wish for most head coaches. While the non-competitive play by the players speaks for itself, the honesty answering that question directly after the loss makes me question whether or not Mazzulla would even care to return at this point, or maybe whether or not the writing has already been on the wall for him internally. Either way, what a disappointing, frustrating, and strange coaching hire this has turned out to be for Boston. And I will say this, I do think some of the blame should certainly be thrown on the Celtics front office, as it's fair to say this team didn't really set Mazzulla up for much success. Where's the veteran coaches on his assistant coaching staff? While Mazzulla certainly is set up with a talented roster, if you look around the league at NBA coaches that we would all consider great coaches, you're sure to find notable assistant coaches that have either been a head coach or are certainly interviewing for open roles. And that certainly doesn't seem to be the case in Boston. So, you know, it's a tough one because as much as I want to criticize Mazzulla all the time, I also look at that front office and say, you know, where was the support in this situation? And I don't feel like he was really set up for that much success for moments like these right now at the biggest stage. So should be interesting to follow that. I know that we're going to cover that here later on in tonight's pod with the Celtics Heat talk, but let's go ahead and start with our first quarter as King James was swept by the Denver Nuggets. And I'll start with you here. What was your big takeaways having just watched an exciting game four?
We mentioned before we went on, I mentioned to you, you know, it was a four-game sweep, but it really didn't feel like a four-game sweep to me. I mean, you had one game decided by six, another game decided by five. There was an 11-point game in game three. And then tonight being a two-point finish where the Lakers had control. You know, they dominated the first half. They played like a team that didn't want to go home. They wanted to keep playing. And so you have a lot of respect for a team that comes out fighting like that. Didn't see that from the other team that's down 2-3-0 in the out east that we'll get into. LeBron, my takeaway, LeBron was terrific, and I will address LeBron specifically at the end of the show. He had a little bit of help, but he certainly did not have enough. And the Nuggets woke up. I mean, the Nuggets, yep. I'm not going to sit here and say they didn't care in the first half or use that silly cliche. The Lakers certainly played with more energy, played with more urgency. There's no question about that, the way they did it. But that third quarter, 36-16, I mean, that's absolutely dominating when you have to dominate. You got beat up in the first half. Your energy wasn't there. Michael Malone certainly saw that, and he was trying to get his team energized. And it just wasn't working. They came out in the second half. Whatever they decided, one thing they decided was to get on the fast break. I mean, they got two fast break points in the first half, seven in the third quarter. They clearly wanted to do that. They got more second chance points in the third quarter. They really went to work in that third quarter. And that was it really turned out to be the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did see that urgency by the Lakers earlier on. LeBron basically played the entire first half. That pretty much says everything we need to know about how urgent tonight's game was, of course. And, of course, he left halftime early and had a heck of a first half there. But at least the NBA fans worldwide were getting treated to a Tristan Thompson halftime interview. I know that we shared a laugh about that. But in all seriousness here, you know, LeBron had it going for him in this one. No better example in that first half than when he had that above the head lob pass that ended up just swishing through the hoop for 3 points. I mean, that was just an incredible fluke of luck, I guess you could say. But credit, as you said, World B, credit to the Nuggets here. They kept fighting throughout this one. They could have easily saw LeBron's first strong first half and said, you know what, we'll punt this and, you know, go home and take care of business, you know, in game five. No, they had the heart of a champion, which is what it takes in this league to, you know, bring it every night. They've established good, healthy habits of continuing to fight in games, and were able to get control of that lead late in the fourth quarter. And I was thoroughly impressed with both sides in this one. I thought, you know, the Lakers played about as hard as you could have thought, played good basketball throughout. I mean, there were some questionable moments from Anthony Davis out there, but, you know, he turned it on there late in the fourth quarter. And Lakers had every chance to win this one. Nuggets just got the best of them once again. And Nuggets, rightfully so, are the Western Conference champions this year.
Yeah, they're the better team. We knew that coming in. It was a long shot for the Lakers. The Lakers getting to this point was impressive enough, we all thought. They had, you know, when you have Anthony Davis and LeBron James, you're looking like you know you're supposed to have a good team. But if you want to give an honest assessment, you look around on the Laker roster. They have the AD, they have LeBron, and they have a lot of Austin Reeves starting to come into his own in this season. We saw that, and Hachimura played well for a good part of the playoffs. But there are a bunch of role players after that. And you look at the Nuggets, you have the MVP, previous MVP, the last couple of years, and the Joker, and you have Jamal Murray, who's just below all-star level. And then you have a bunch of other players, a lot of whom they're kind of, I don't know where they fall in between. They're not stars. They're not role players either, though. You know, Michael Porter Jr. is not a role player. Aaron Gordon's not a role player. You know, Jamal Murray obviously is not a role player. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is not, he's not a role player. These are quality players where the Lakers basically have role players. Dennis Schroeder's a role player. D'Angelo Russell, I'm sorry, until you show me a little more, you're a role player on this team. You just are. It's the way it is. Lonnie Walker, we like Lonnie Walker, but he's a role player.
Yep.
The Nuggets don't have that. They have a couple. You know, Bruce Brown is probably considered a role player. Jeff Green is probably that. And then after, you know, by the way, they only played seven players tonight, so the Nuggets clearly weren't taking this game off. So there is a definite gap in talent between the Nuggets and the Lakers, and it showed up over four games. But I think we both credit the Nuggets for coming out and playing hard in this game. And I think it was the way the series went. They didn't blow out. I mean, they had an 11-point game in game three and stuff, and that they jumped out or whatever. But the two games in Denver were tough games. The Lakers had a shot in those. They didn't execute, and they deserved to lose. So if you're the Nuggets, you're not thinking we got this one in the bag. You're thinking back to, geez, they pushed us. Games one and two, do we really want to extend this series? And so they really showed, to use Rudy T's famous quote, the heart of a champion.
Yep. And I think this is a great example of how some of these things take time, and obviously it going through some tribulations here. This is a team that's been battling the last couple of years as a group to make it to this peak level, the pinnacle of basketball, making it to the NBA finals. They've been there. They've gone through the struggles. And, you know, I think that cohesion and having that experience as a group is what separates a team like the Nuggets from a team like the Lakers, despite the Lakers having two of the NBA greats in Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And I think it was a big test for the Nuggets to go ahead and close this one out as they continued to push there in game four. I mean, the Joker played 45 of the available 48 minutes in this one. Murray, 43 minutes. Aaron Gordon, 40. Porter, 40. And Caldwell Polk, 39. And as you had already stated, only two reserves played off this bench. So definitely for Michael Malone and his roster, it's got to be a good feeling knowing you got now about a week. I think first finals game is June 1st, if I remember correctly there, June 1st. So they're going to have some time to kind of rest, recover, and get set for, you know, who they face next. It's, of course, looking like the Miami Heat. But one last thing on this game before we do go ahead and move forward, unless you got something else, is, late in that game for the Lakers, I believe they were down two at the time. LeBron James had it at the top of the key in a critical two-for-one possession. Had some space. It looked like the Nuggets defense was trying to bait him into a three. I think in years past, we would see LeBron James, you know, go full throttle, put his head down, and aggressively attack the rim. This time, you know, he just kind of waited, debated taking the shot, and then flipped it over quickly to Schroeder, who swung it around the horn to the corner and had it deflected out of bounds, trying to get the ball to Reeves. And, coming out of that timeout when Darvin Ham took that, there was like 4 seconds left on the shot clock, and LeBron had to settle for a off-balance James Harden, like one-legged fadeaway there that clanked off the side of the backboard. And my question to you will be, is this just another tall tale sign of LeBron James kind of slowing down, or do you think it was just the usage in this game and in the series, or are you going to start crediting some of this to his age? Are we finally starting to see the father time as well as he played? I mean, that was a critical moment to where if you're the man and you're, you know, one of the greatest in the game today, I mean, you'd think he would take over in that scenario, right?
Well, you would think. I don't think, you know, he was gassed in that. For, I mean, he played all but 4 seconds in this game, which is mind-boggling. So yeah. he literally gave everything he had in this game tonight. So I'm not going to criticize that play too much. I agree with you. It was a weird situation. He could have easily taken it to the hole. I think he was busy assessing the situation. If I remember right, Joker had come out on him on that play.
Yeah.
But he sat back, LeBron did, to assess the whole situation, read the defense, and he's probably looking up at the clock, probably thinking, maybe, do I have enough for two for one? What do I do? And I think he basically just took too much time in getting the offense set. I don't think age had anything to do. I don't think tiredness of the game. It could have been. I just don't think it was that situation. I think it was just a bad decision on his part in getting the offense going in that situation, and became a frantic thing. Like you said, they batted the ball out of bounds. They had less than 4 seconds to get a shot off, and it ended up turning out to be a bad shot. I always like in those situations, me personally, watching a game, to not worry about the clock as much and take a good shot, because it seems to me that you end up taking a bad shot when you're more concerned about when you take the shot. You hear people on TV all the time say, you know, somebody makes a great shot. Oh, did he leave too much time on the clock? Well, you take the best shot when you get the best shot. That's how it works. Yep. You deal with the rest later. I'd rather take a good shot with 10 seconds than a lousy shot with 5. And, you know,
I agree.
You know, then you're scrambling, just like what happened here. I think it was just a bad situation, a bad running of the offense, execution-wise. I don't think the being winded or being tired had anything to do with it. Although, 47 minutes and 56 seconds, yeah. It very well could have been. I mean, that's an incredible – he played more than anybody else on the court tonight. The guys, the oldest on the court, played the most and scored the most points, had 14 rebounds – or had 10 rebounds and 9 assists. One assist away from a triple-double. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. And I want to be clear. Obviously, it's easy for me to criticize, as is anyone sitting here on the couch watching the game. But, you know, as you mentioned, and I failed to point out, he had the switch on to Jokic. Jokic had 5 fouls. So, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like in that type of circumstances, in years past, we would have saw a different LeBron. And, you know, obviously... Well,
He did take it to the hole a couple possessions earlier, I think, to tie the game, where he took it right to the hole. And I can't remember. I think Joker was on him, but I'm not positive. And I thought he let up and he beat him to the hole. And I think it tied the game with about a minute or a minute and a half to go. I'd have to, you know, double check that. But he did take it to the hole. That was a perfect opportunity, you would think, to take it to the hole. But he was probably waiting to see when – who was going to be available. The double team came when he started to drive, because that's what happened on the last play. As you know, he drove it, and Jamal Murray was on him, and Joker was on him, and he didn't get a shot off, really, and it got tied up with Jamal Murray, who made a great defensive play. So I'm assuming, without knowing and hearing the post-game interview, he was probably assessing the defense, seeing where the double was going to come, and it just took too much time in developing.
Yeah, no, great take there. And I'm sure glad that last possession where LeBron didn't get a shot off, it was a totally clean defensive possession, because the last thing I need to hear is people being, well, he was fouled. Oh, it was a fluke. You know, I'm just glad that Murray cleanly tied that ball up. We had a good contest there down low, and just good defense.
And he had Aaron Gordon on him on that last possession too. So, you know, Murray came over to help, made a great defensive play, clean grab there. And that was the play. You want LeBron to take the shot in that spot. And you figured he would, and it just didn't work out.
Yep. Totally. And so congrats go out to the Denver Nuggets and their fans as they do reach the finals. Exciting times in Denver, and should be fun to see who they face next, which leads us right into our second quarter here as the Heat destroy the Celtics back at home in game 3. My quick assessment on this one will be, before I ask for yours, no heart by the Celtics, direct line drives to the basket given up all game long. Where did Boston's defense go?
That's a very good question, because This is a team that was number two, I believe, in efficiency during the season in defensive efficiency. People listen to this podcast, I talked about it probably on a episode-to-episode basis, but one of three teams, top 10 in the offensive, top 10 in defensive efficiency, the Cavaliers and the Sixers being the other two. So it was really, really mind-boggling to see a team that they held to 110 points per 100 possessions in their regular season meetings. And in three games in the series, the Miami Heat are scoring 124 points per 100 possessions. It's a really real disappointing effort for them defensively all over the place for Boston.
Yeah, and you know, as much criticism as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown both deservedly will get and have gotten thus far after the Game 3 performance, Malcolm Brogdon, I just want to point this guy out. I mean, he was my pick for Sixth Man of the Year this year. 0 points in 18 minutes, 0-6 from the field, including 0-3 from downtown. Didn't really do anything. I mean, 2 assists, 2 rebounds. Their best guy off the bench. As much flack as he's gotten, especially with how things have gone, Grant Williams had 12 points, 5 of 7 from the field. I thought Williams, in the time that I watched that game, I thought Grant Williams certainly played his butt off and certainly cared a lot more than any one of those other Celtics out there.
Yeah, Tatum, Brown, and Brogdon in this series, 10 of 52 from three-point range. Those are your top three scorers during the regular season. How are you going to win the games when you can't get shooting any better than that from your best players? So, I mean, it's really – so I agree with you. The effort they put forth in Game 3 was awful. It was simply awful. And if you're a Celtics fan, it has to be unacceptable. You can lose. I mean, look at the difference in these series. The Lakers get swept, and it's a disappointment. But they're – you know, they got – further than you thought, and they played hard in basically all the games, and they played down the stretch, down the wire in three of the games. So while you're disappointed if you're a Laker fan, you have respect for them. Hey, we fought hard every step of the way.
Yep.
The Celtics are – it's not that you're losing to Miami. It's that you're just not putting forth the effort. There's no excuse for the effort of the Celtics in Game 3. And – while I vehemently disagree with your take on Joe Mazzulla, whether he now he should be back, and we can go back and forth on that one. I've been doing on social media for a couple of days now. He gets the blame too. He gets as much blame as anybody else. My biggest deal is I don't think he should get more than their stars. We were giving Jason Tatum all this. You know, we are anointing him the greatest Celtic ever after his Game 7 performance against the Sixers. 51 points, the greatest ever. We're talking about it's going to be him and Bird and you know, whoever else you want to put up, but Havlicek and all the great ones. And you can't do better than what you're doing right now. I know he's got 26 a game, but he's shooting 25% from three. That's the Celtics game. And they're just not getting it done. And their stars are not getting it done, led by Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Yep. And then on the flip side, you look at Miami, and they seem to have guys just stepping up all over the place. Most recently, Gabe Vincent, 29 points in 35 minutes, 11 of 14 from the field, 6 of 9 from three. He was tremendous in this game. Jimmy Butler, you know, had a pretty off night, 5 of 13, 16 points. Cody Martin, another star off the bench. I mean, they just keep getting valuable contributions from guys up and down this roster. And, a lot of that goes – credit to the quote-unquote Heat culture of staying ready, being prepared for the moment, and finding your spots to go ahead and be impactful for this team. Duncan Robinson, as much flack as we gave him this year for, you know, kind of being a bust when it came to making $90 million, couldn't make a shot. 5 of 7 from three, 22 points, leading the Heat off the bench. I mean, just wherever you look on this roster, guys are stepping up left and right to go ahead and put together a strong game for the team. And, you know, as much as the ratings might not be there, I know that's the question going on right now amongst Twitter everywhere. I think it's going to be a heck of a series if we end up with the Nuggets Miami Heat. And I would say most NBA fans that are diehards and truly appreciate the game are really looking forward to a matchup like this.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't figure to be a ratings bonanza, but then again, I don't care. I'm going to be watching. Yeah. I'll be watching no matter what. Right. Yeah, I think it'll be a great matchup. The Miami Heat are simply doing nothing like we saw during the regular season. I mean, it's just during the regular season, they were 25th in efficiency. They were 25th in effective field goal percentage. They were 27th in three-point shooting. I mean, the Orlando Magic and San Antonio Spurs both shot better from three-point range during the season than the Miami Heat. That gives you to give you some idea of how bad it was Miami shooting. So what are they doing in the conference finals? They're 48% from three-point range. And that's unbelievable. And another thing, they're shooting. They've missed 9 shots in the restricted area in 3 games, shooting 80% in the restricted area. By the way, that's as much a testament to the Celtics' lack of defense as it is to Miami's ability to score up there. They were 20th in the regular season in shooting in mid-range. They're hitting 50% in the series. It's unbelievable how the turnaround, and we saw it against the Bucks. We saw these are the numbers they put against the Bucks. And then we get to the Knicks series, they can't do that against the Knicks series. And guess what? They didn't do that against the Knicks, and they still won easily 5 games. What was the series end up? What did Miami series end up being? The Knicks series. I've kind of eased out my memory. Was it 5 or 6? I can't remember now.
I think it was five, too.
I know it was 5. They won in Miami. So it did go 5. They didn't get back to the guard. So I apologize. It was 5 games. But this is not a team that was down with 3 minutes to go in the second play-in game on their home court to the Bulls.
Yeah.
And they're in this spot right now. It's a remarkable turnaround. It's one of the best stories the NBA's had. 2 of the best stories, if you want to be honest about it, with the fact that the Nuggets are in there for the first time. And you got Miami, which is, unless something happens dramatically in Beantown, it's over there. I mean, I can't fathom a team as good as the Celtics were during the regular season putting a worse effort on the court in the playoffs, in this series. By the way, one more thing real quick. The Celtics are 8-8 in the postseason, just so you know, we clear that up. They're not running rough shots. I think the Nuggets are 12-3 now in the postseason. Celtics are 8-8. So this is, this has not exactly been their proudest moment in a playoffs.
Not at all. And I think the Nuggets are also undefeated at home, which speaks volumes about the altitude and that home court advantage that they not only have, but continue to hold up and take pride in. So that will be big moving forward into the NBA Finals as well. So I got to bring it up before we lead into break. You kind of teased it, having been vocal on Twitter. So give me your argument for Joe Mazzulla. I mean, so if you're a Celtics fan, or let's say you're the Celtics owner, you're bringing him back. Is that what you're saying, or what are you defending here with Mazzulla?
I'm defending the fact that he went into a bad situation late.
Okay.
Yeah. He didn't have one member of his staff, Stoudemire, left to go to Georgia Tech. He didn't have – you mentioned how he doesn't have a pro coach or a guy with head coaching experience, and I agree. I don't think there was an opportunity to put somebody in that spot. I think if you're going to be assessed his performance for an entire season, then do it from the entire season. 2 months in, they were on a record pace offensively. And Joe was looking like the coach of the year. The team played well enough. He got an extension, which is, by the way, is another reason why I don't think he's going to be gone. I think this is if Eric Spoelstra is the Pat Riley protege, then I think Joe Mazzulla is the Brad Stevens protege. And I think what you're going to see, or what I hope you're going to see, is put a better staff out for him going forward. That means more experienced people on the staff. Now, if it turns out, the team ends up the same situation next year, well, then you definitely have an issue. I don't think it's a fair assessment of his coaching the way they're playing in the one series. as opposed to what they did during the regular season. They were one or two in the league by the end of the season. So I don't think it's a fair – if you want to do that, that's fine, but at least acknowledge that he did have a very good regular season. They did not do this in spite of him. So right. I think if he's going to get the criticism – and it's fair. I just said, I think he deserves some of the blame just like everybody else. He's not he's not absolved of any criticism in this. But I also think he didn't get a – I don't want to say a fair shake, but he didn't have a chance before the season. He walked into a bad situation because of what happened with their previous coach. And I think he needs a full season of evaluation. I think he needs a full staff. I think he needs to they need some changes in that roster because this isn't getting it done.
Yeah. No, and I think the changes on the roster are what's going to be needed because everything you just said is certainly fair, legitimate. And, you know, I did try to mention a little of that in my opening tip about not having the seasoned veterans around him to help groom him or help advise him during these situations. But, you know, having worked with the players and kind of knowing how they are, I think a lot of these guys in the exit meeting, whenever that exit does occur, are going to throw it on him because it's a players' league and that's what they like to do is, well, we could have done better if the coach was better. So,
but that absolutely could be true. You may absolutely be right. We saw it in the Sixers series at the end of that series when Joel Embiid and James Harden criticized the front of us. Well, we can't do it ourselves. We need other, which is obviously we all saw was garbage then. Here's the other thing I'll say that, and I don't disagree with that. The reason I don't think Mazzulla's getting a fair shake in that Sixers series, everybody was waiting for him to start Robert Williams along with Al Horford. He finally did it in that series. It turned out to be a success. But then we hear, well, somebody got in his ear and told him he has to do it. Like he wasn't allowed the opportunity to get credit for making that decision. Somebody made the decision for him. Now, I have no idea if somebody did or not, but neither does anybody else. We just assume that's the case. So that's what I mean. Nobody gave him a fair shake. I think he deserves a season to get a fair. And if Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown wants to be critical of Mazzulla because of what happened in this series, then they can go take a hike. I mean, geez, you can't put the effort that they put on there and just sit here and point fingers at someone else. That's a loser mentality of the highest order.
I don't disagree. I think you have a lot of valid points there. I think he was put in a tough situation, and I just feel like he's in a tough spot now with where the Celtics are trending going into game four in Miami. So hopefully these guys play with some pride. I know this would not look good for any of the players on their resume if they show no heart in a game four like they did in game three. So I would fully expect to see a Celtics team that comes out motivated to at least send this back to Boston and make this series somewhat respectable. But we'll have to report back on that. And with that, we've reached our halftime buzzer. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break and come back with you for the second half. And we're back with the start of the third quarter. And we were just talking about a coach and Coach Mazzulla. Let's talk about the coaching carousel some more and provide some updates here, World B. And let's start with the Milwaukee Bucks. As Woj reported earlier on Monday that there are a final three that are set as of now, and that is Nick Nurse, Kenny Atkinson, and Adrian Griffin. And what I found ironic about this list is that Griffin was on Nick Nurse's staff in Toronto. So technically it's Kenny Atkinson of the Warriors and two Raptors coaches. What's your take from what Woj has reporting?
I think it's a good list. I'm a little surprised that somebody like Monty Williams wasn't considered for, or maybe he was and he didn't want that role. I have no idea. I shouldn't speculate that, but I would have thought he'd be a good voice to be on that team that has a lot of veterans. And obviously Monty Williams is well respected as a coach, as a person. And I think that would have gone over well. I think Kenny Atkinson, it broke my heart that he accepted and turned down, said no last year to the Hornets job. Not that it wasn't 2020 hindsight on his part, worked out well there. But I think he's a good coach. I was excited about the idea of him ending up in Charlotte. So if I liked him in Charlotte, I got to like him coaching Milwaukee if that becomes the case.
Yeah. So, I mean, just kind of breaking this one down here, of course, Kenny Atkinson, I had used my opening tip on before, saying that, of course, he has a lot of the same principles and comes from that same coaching line as Mike Budenholzer and Darvin Ham and all those guys. The one with Adrian Griffin, unless you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan, you know, Adrian Griffin was an assistant coach on Scott Skiles' staff right before I actually joined the team. He has familiarity with the Bucks front office with John Horst. Adrian Griffin has also been, you know, certainly trying to get a head coaching job for almost a decade now. He's been an assistant coach in this league for quite some time and has been interviewing for at least multiple teams for a number of years now. So he's certainly knocking on the door and has gotten his fair share of practice for these situations and seems prepared. So, you know, I hope for a guy like Coach Griffin, you know, if he doesn't land a big job like the Milwaukee Bucks, that he'd at least get a situation like Detroit where, you know, he could be the guy that's been preparing for this job, you know, has been ready to take over and lead a team. And being a former player himself could probably do a really good job grooming a young, talented, but raw Pistons group.
Yeah, I could see that. When you've been in the league a long time, you know, you've been in the system for a long time. I think you get some amount of respect right there. Being around the league, being a former player also adds to that. Yeah, it's nice to see somebody like that who's been around for a long time getting these opportunities to interview for and be finalists for these jobs. Now he just needs somebody to believe in him. And if it's the Bucks, you know, more power to him. You don't want to miss, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks on this hire, since you just let a quality coach, a championship coach, get away from you, or you just send him packing. You don't want to miss on this one. Because that right now, this is a franchise altering decision if you mess up. Yep. A lot of personnel could be changing if you don't get the right coach in this spot.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. And then, you know, the Phoenix Suns, you know, just despite how intriguing the job is, the Suns kind of remain the ultimate wild card right now as far as the head coaches and the rumors that are swirling right now. All we know at this point is that the new owner, Matt Ishbia, has been taking the reins, making decisions, and it's been reported that the general manager, James Jones, has taken kind of a backseat here in this entire process. Obviously, reports came out about the decision to make the Kevin Durant trade, and of course, when you have a big trade like that, the owner's going to be involved, but it seems like Ishbia is totally involved in this, and kind of as an outsider looking in, will be, how would you feel as a Suns fan with a brand new owner, you know, making a big swing for KD and, you know, firing a guy like Monty Williams and, you know, still not much being said about, you know, a final three set to take over as head coach? Would you be concerned?
I'd be concerned. Absolutely. Unless this is not a job for me, this is not a job for an assistant coach, unless it's somebody from Monty's staff that they already know and respect. Yep. Kind of like when the Knicks in the 90s went from Pat Riley to Don Nelson for half a season and then went to Jeff Van Gundy and a longtime assistant there, and he took over for years with that franchise. I think an outsider who is an assistant on a roster like this isn't going to work. I think the name's Ty Lue. I've mentioned before, I think he'd be perfect for this job. I think Ty Lue would be perfect in any job, actually, but I think he'd be great in this job. I think Budenholzer would be a solid pick in this job. You want veteran quality. There's enough championship caliber coaches out there or quality veterans out there to pick from. You know, the other name, Kevin Young has been mentioned, Phoenix assistant. That would be a situation where if they like him, if the players like him, if they're impressed with him, yeah, he could get that job. But I think looking outside, from an assistant standpoint, I don't think, me personally, that would work in this situation. I think you want somebody, I don't want to say name, I want to say experience as a head coach. And I think there's enough out there to, you know, go forward and find the right coach. Just like the Bucks, this is a big-time decision. You do not want to miss on this one.
Yep, Yep, totally agree. And as you mentioned, there are a lot of quality hires available right now in the coaching market. And please promise me you will show up to our Friday podcast after I ask you this one. But let's just say Boston does make a change. Would it make sense to bring Doc Rivers back in? Last coach to win a title in Beantown. And our own Celtic colleague here, Bruce, seems to love Doc. Could you see that happening if a change is made?
Well, given my feelings about Doc as a head coach and being a Knicks fan, I'm all for the chaos, and that would be chaotic there. So I'm all for such a chaotic thing. I don't think he's a bad coach. I just think there are better coaches out there than Doc Rivers. I'm sorry. I just do. I don't see them going that route. On the other, you know, here's the other thing too. You know, they just signed Mazzulla. They removed the interim tag and signed him to a long-term deal. And now I'm going to have to pay him, not the coach. And now I'm going to have to pay Doc some serious money to come back and coach this team. I don't know if he gets you any further than where they are right now. I'll be honest with you. I don't. Where's the resume for Doc that gets him further? You know, that says, all right, the Celtics are going to go further than they've ever gone. With Mazzulla or Brad Stevens or whoever. I mean, I'm looking at a coach. The one championship he won, they brought in Kevin Garnett. They brought in Ray Allen, two veterans to go along with Paul Pierce. That's a veteran group. You have a veteran group now in Boston, but they're a young veteran group for the most part. Your best players are young. And we don't know what that roster is going to look like at the end of the season, you know, beginning of next season with Jaylen Brown's situation. So I don't think – if you're going to make a coaching move, I think there are better options than Doc.
Okay, that's fair. Just had to get a pulse as far as the Doc Rivers is concerned, because, I mean, unless it was like Brad Stevens coming down – from the front office, which definitely won't happen. You know, a guy like Doc would be at least a good in Boston PR spin. I feel like a lot of people would love that move, and it would create a lot of buzz around the team of, all right, now we got an established guy that, you know, has a resume here. And we love Doc. We love Doc. I could just see Boston fans kind of rallying behind that.
Sure. Well, instead of being down 3-0 in the finals, you could be up 3-1 and worried about whether you're still going to win.
Well said there. And with that, we'll go ahead and get to our fourth quarter. And it's mailbag time, World B. We've got some listener-submitted questions. And our first question is, with Woj having called Wembanyama the greatest prospect in NBA history on the draft lottery night, James wants to know, what does Wemby have to do in his career to live up to that kind of hype? Tough question there.
It's a tough question. First of all, I disagree with that assessment. I don't think there's ever been anybody, a bigger prospect coming in this league during my lifetime than LeBron James. I
would agree.
There's people have to remember he could have been the number one pick at 16 years old. He was that big a deal. The expectations are so high for him. I would think, I've heard people say a Hall of Fame career is not enough for someone like that. I disagree. I think a guy who puts up Hall of Fame type numbers in that spot would be an acceptable goal to reach. It's not unacceptable. You know, it's not an unacceptable goal for him to try and reach. Being among the greatest of all time and whatever, that's always debatable. We'll, you know, debate that to the end, and that's fine. I will say this. I saw a picture of him the other day on Twitter or whatever, standing next to Rudy Gobert, who goes 7-1, and Rudy Gobert was shorter. So that gives you an idea of what we're talking about, the kind of height, the kind of talent we're looking at with him. Have an all-star caliber, like a Carmelo type of career, with maybe a championship if you're fortunate enough or whatever. And that'll be acceptable. I don't know anybody in 20 years that would say that was a bust. They're a disappointment. Right.
Yeah. No, I thought it was very odd how they kind of set the stage on the draft lottery night. Woj even coming out and saying that, you know, he talked with an NBA scout that said, you know, there's a chance Wembanyama could be the best player in the league in 3 years. I'm like, 3 years seems like a stretch to me. I think that'd typically be like 5 years at best. I mean, I don't know. I just hope we give this guy some chances to grow. I mean, I don't think it's going to be like the LeBron James story coming in day one and having that kind of impact, especially coming over from playing international ball. And then, of course, the size. I mean, this guy, as you mentioned, 7'5". He's got to kind of build into his body a little bit. I mean, he's going to be greeted with some tough physical play in the NBA.
Well, I'll say this. If he is as big a prospect or as good a prospect as somebody like LeBron James was in 2003, it will not take him very long to become one of the best players in year three. If he's everything, it didn't take LeBron that long. LeBron was among the best in year two after his rookie season. By the time second season came around, he was a much different build. He was a much different type of player. I get all that. I have no idea if this kid's going to be all that in a bag of chips. But if he is what all the scouts and everybody else says, by year three, he could be, you know, if he makes all NBA, you're on your way to being at that level in a few years with LeBron and all the rest of them.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun to watch with Wemby joining the San Antonio Spurs and just seeing how his career develops here very quickly in the NBA. Now, our second question, of course, we do have a lot of Phoenix listeners, Suns fans that like to chime in. We got a big fan by the name of Mike that put together a list of 8 in trade rumors that he's seen out on the internet. And he wants us to pick our favorite for the Suns. Now, how much you believe of these, I'll leave it up to everyone listening to go ahead and judge for themselves. But first one is that the Bulls would receive DeAndre Ayton and Chris Paul, with the Suns getting DeMar DeRozan, Lonzo Ball, Andre Drummond, and a conditional first-round pick. Do you believe? Is that believable?
I'm Phoenix, I don't do that. I don't believe it. If I'm Phoenix, I don't make that pick. Why would I want Lonzo Ball?
Yeah, my thinking.
A Lonzo Ball fan. I'm a fan of Lonzo Ball. He's just damaged goods at this point. It's just DeMar DeRozan is you're going to find somebody who's at the same age as Kevin Durant. I mean, do you really want to go down that road? It's hard to believe you're getting younger by getting rid of Chris Paul, but you're not getting that much younger if you bring in DeMar DeRozan, another player I like, but no, that's not a believable trade to me.
Gotcha. Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think the Lonzo Ball aspect of that and just the idea of getting him and not even knowing whether or not he's going to be able to, you know, play basketball, all jokes aside, I mean, there's a lot of questions whether or not he's going to be able to play at a high level again. Hopefully that's not the case. But, yeah, hard pass on that one. Second one involves the Boston Celtics. The Celtics would receive Ayton and Chris Paul, with the Suns getting Brogdon, Smart, and Horford.
Well, just Chris Paul comes with everything here, doesn't he?
Suns fans want him out.
Yeah, well, they want him out, but they want the contract out for CP3 too. That's another one. Why am I doing that if I'm the Celtics? Getting rid? It doesn't make sense from the Boston standpoint. All these trades make the great thing about these trades when you're a fan. It all works great from your home team's perspective. Yeah, that's a great trade. I can trade Mike Trout to the Mets, and I'll get some relief pitcher in return. That works out great for my Mets. So let's make that deal. It doesn't usually work out. Why would the Celtics want Chris Paul at this stage? And, why would they give up as much as they, you know, you're talking about in that scenario, Brogdon and Smart, and who I can't remember the other player mentioned.
It was Horford.
And Horford. Why would I give that up? Granted, they're not exactly distinguishing themselves in this series by any of those three for the Celtics, but still, I'm not going to deal with that. And where do I put Robert Williams?
You'd have to play that. You have the Twin Towers in Boston. Well, you have two guys down there. Maybe they'd be able to stop Wembanyama if you had two guys you could double him with, you know? Maybe that's the strategy.
Twice a year.
He's going to be that good. I mean, you better be prepared for him if he's going to be this good as Woj.
I'm going to set my whole roster to play the Spurs twice a year. And Joe Mazzulla is the one on the hot seat. We need Brad Stevens for making that deal.
Yeah. All right, two more. Warriors receive Ayton, with the Suns getting Jonathan Kuminga and Jordan Poole. This one could have some legs around it. Ayton and Poole swap. Not sure if Kuminga would be dangled, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it works out great for the Warriors. I get Ayton in the middle, and I'm giving up really underachieving Poole this year. And Kuminga, who's, again, we talked at the beginning of the show about role players. That's what he is. He's a role player until proven otherwise. He has flashes, but, you know, role players they have that label for a reason. They're good 1 week, they're bad the next. They're good one game, bad the next. So it really becomes an Ayton for a pool thing. And then you decide if you're Phoenix, where am I going to play Jordan Poole? Am I going to make a trade for a starting center to bring in somebody to back up Devin Booker?
Yeah, I mean, I think that guy would be – I think Cameron Payne would be your backup point guard. You'd start Booker and Poole and play Devin Booker as the prominent point guard, quote-unquote, in the backcourt, which he did show a really good job of doing in Chris Paul's absence, as we did talk about on the show. Just not sure for an 82-game season if that could hold up or be likely, but thought it was interesting. And with Jonathan Kuminga, I mean, the more I watched of him in the time that I did get to see him out on the floor, I mean, he is still pretty young. Could he be maybe at best? I think the way I'd look at him is, like, best case scenario, he's the second coming of like an Aaron Gordon type role guy. I mean, not just above a role player, not an all-star, but like could be a nice piece off the ball.
Does that get the Phoenix Suns any closer to a title, which is their got to be their goal at this point? You know, all these moves that they're making, the trade for KD, you got Booker in his prime, you just fired your coach. You're trying to bring in a lineup, coaches and players to win a championship. Does bringing in Jordan Poole and Kuminga get you one step closer, and losing the center get you one step closer to a title? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Now the Warriors, it works out. I think it works out fine.
That would be really intriguing to see Ayton on the Warriors, see whether or not they could get to him and obviously get him going back on the right path that we had seen in years prior when he was, you know, making some strides in this game. But I just don't see it happening, but I thought it was a pretty good of the ones that were submitted. That was probably the best one. And with that, World B, we'll go ahead and get to our final thoughts here tonight and wind down tonight's show. And I'll let you go ahead and lead us off.
Well, thank you, Ross. My opening comment was on a player who was third overall pick in the 2003 NBA draft. And my closing thought is on a player who was the number one pick from that draft, LeBron James. This isn't a commentary on where James ranks on the all-time greats list, because that debate's gone on for years and will continue long after he leads this game, whenever the heck that is. And there's nothing that's going on at this point that's going to change anybody's opinion of where he ranks. But I wanted to talk about just how lucky we are as basketball fans to see a player like this do what he's been doing in year number 20, in a season which he turned 38. James averaged nearly 29 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists a game. Here's a list of players this year that average at least 25 points, 7 rebounds, and 6 assists a game. LeBron and Luka. That's the list.
Wow.
This is a guy in age 38, season number 20, putting all this together. And in game 4 on Monday night, he played 47 minutes and 56 seconds and scored 40 points. Almost had a triple-double. He's one of the last – he's the last one standing from the 2003 draft. And we as fans are lucky to be there for his longevity.
Well said there. Definitely need to appreciate this greatness while we do have him, because one day we certainly will miss seeing King James out there, and we'll have to rely on YouTube highlights to kind of relive those memories. As for my final thought, I'm actually taking your opening thought with Carmelo Anthony retiring. And, you know, there was a great question raised on Twitter today. Which Nugget who wore number 15 will be retired in the rafters? Will it be Carmelo Anthony or Nikola Jokic? If you could only choose one, the answer is quite obvious, even before the Joker obviously is now headed on to the NBA Finals this year and has a chance to bring a title to the Mile High. But is there a chance we actually see both? And I know I'm putting you on the spot here, World B, but can you think of another team in the NBA in which two players have gone up in the rafters with the same jersey number? Because before taping here tonight, I could not. And I didn't want to cheat. I wanted to keep this organic.
I honestly want to say it's happened. It just doesn't come to mind at the moment. Okay. I'd have to look at the Knicks numbers to be sure. But I want to say it's happened, but I'm not positive.
Okay. Well, we will definitely report back to our listeners on our next episode whether or not it's been done before. I wanted to see off the top of your head if you could come up with it just to show how incredible you are with your basketball knowledge.
There's absolutely nothing on the top of my head. Let's just get that out of
there right now. All right. Well, at least you confirmed that for us here at the end of the show. But we want to thank everyone for tuning in here. That will do it for this edition of the 48-minute podcast,
by the way,
I believe. Oh, go
by
ahead.
By the way, before we go,
yeah,
Nick McGuire and Earl Monroe had their number 15 retired by the New York Knicks up in the rafters.
There you go. You have
so
it.
There he is. So I looked it up.
It was right
on the tip of your
tongue.
I apologize for ruining your clothes there, but that's had to get that in.
No, you didn't ruin anything. And in fact, you just confirmed you're the best we have on the show here. I mean, obviously, right on the tip of your tongue, you said the New York Knicks.
I'm something, all right. I'm something else.
Well, with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you on Friday to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around this association. Take care, everybody.